Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Always nice to have you on board for a journey of empowerment, breaking through some myths and challenging some of the authority institutions, especially the mainstream media and our corporatocracy. Today, we're going to begin our program, as we always do, with the latest on health and healing, including for those of you who suffer from osteoarthritis, a new study out of the University of Montreal that will help you, something natural, non-toxic. And also, if you have knee osteoarthritis, Tufts University School of Medicine has some advice. I'll share that with you. And an old favorite, for those of you who grew up in the South, as I did, what did you use when you had just about anything going wrong with you? A cold, a flu, fell out of sorts, fatigue? Black elderberry. Well, what does it do? There's some new University of Connecticut information I'll share. And if you want another piece of the puzzle, one more tool to help fight cancer, University of Alabama says, try magnolia extract. I'll explain that. And also turmeric and mulberry can aid in arthritis from Eugene, South Korea University. And also today, we'll talk about how a sustained aerobic exercise program creates adult neurogenesis in the brain at University of Finland. And what does that mean exactly? I'll go through that. Also today, I'm going to spend extra time on vaccines. First, an original in-depth investigative report that is now published on our websites, including my personal Facebook website, so that you can download it. You'll see all the references. It's all completely documented. And I'm going to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt and without equivocation, yes, there is a connection between vaccines and autism. Just all the scientific literature. Then a brand new Yale University study shows an association between vaccines and brain disorders. And then dirty vaccines. Every single human vaccine tested was contaminated with metals and debris and cells. From Celeste McGovern from Green Med Info, I'll share that with you. Very important Italian study. Also today from our environmental section, because we're going to take you to Fukushima. There's something going on there that the mainstream media has failed to grasp or understand. But our guest, who is an expert in the area, Kevin Camps, will share what's going on. And then we have a special audio clip from Professor Busby, who will tell us about why we should be very concerned, and especially all of our listeners who are in Japan. And we have many listeners all in every country of the world, including Japan. You've been misinformed. You're at risk. And the government, typical of the Japanese government, is such a misogynist, racist government, and so bigoted that they're lying to their own people. Well, you have the largest city in the world. You have Tokyo, nearly 40 million people in one city. And it's only about 140 miles or so, more or less, from Fukushima. Now, just do the math. The radiation goes into the water, yes, but it goes into the air. It is not contained at all. In fact, it's too hot for anything. Even robots going in there get melted. Now they say it's the highest level since the blast of radiation and getting hotter. What does it mean it's getting hotter? How hot? Could this create a major explosion? Our guests will explain that. But we interviewed a person who went to hundreds of locations, from rooftops to playgrounds, and did measurements. Every single measurement taken around Tokyo and its suburbs showed dangerously high levels of radiation. But what about those news shots of a radiation meter on the ground? Well, what they did, they went in there and they dug a hole and cleared out the radiation. Then they put their measurement in there. You were photoshopped a lie. You were given fake news by your non-democratic government. So it's time that you fought back. You went to the streets. You threw the bastards out of office. Protest. Japan has a very, very difficult time with protesting. They're so conditioned. So it's time that you break the shackles and protest your worthless, corrupt, terrible government that you have, because they're putting you at risk. Because it's there. At 12 miles an hour, that radiation has been saturating the island, the fields, the streams, the underground aquifers, since it exploded. You have not been told the truth. We will tell you the truth on this show today. Spaceship Earth, your main oxygen systems are collapsing. Now, each day I'm going to give you one of the feedback loops and how it interrelates to the other feedback loops and how these feedback loops are now out of control. Virtually nothing we can do will stop the effects. But what we should be doing is what will prevent other feedback loops completely collapsing. So today I'm going to talk about something you have not heard: how the oxygen levels are being impacted, what that means for the quality of life. In fact, a lot of life collapses. And extreme wildfires are going to go up by 50%. And also, I mentioned yesterday about how hot it was getting in the Middle East, and you have hundreds of millions of people in the Middle East. None of it is sustainable. Every single country, no exceptions, are going to be uninhabitable in the very near future. And the only reason they're habitable at all today is because the wealth, the oil wealth, has been able to buy them resources that they bring into their country. But where do they get these? They've completely decimated Peru's hardwood rainforest, which has left that country now with massive erosion and with desertification. And that causes more global warming, and that dries up their few lakes and their water supplies. So where they had thought it was great to get a big check from Japan and to export all that, now they're paying that consequence. But how much longer can a non-sustainable country buy the few resources that are available for an ever-growing population? That is not possible. So another article came out today called Middle East Online, quote, "Arab countries face climate warming reality. Region is suffering from extreme summer temperatures, which reached 54 degrees Celsius in Kuwait, cyclones in Oman and Yemen, and snow in Saudi Arabia," all on the same day, by the way. And this is a post from Samar Qadi in Beirut. So what I said yesterday, they just are posting today. It shows you how some of the people are waking up a little faster than what they have in the past. And today, you will hear a very rare clip. I doubt anyone has heard it. And when I found it, I said, ah, the godfather of capitalism's trickle-down theory, the Nobel Prize winner from Chicago, University of Chicago, who created what was called the Chicago School of Economics. And I want you to hear Norman talk about the pencil. And this became what all the libertarians and the capitalists believe in, the pencil. Well, I'm going to play you the clip, because this motivated the Ayn Rand philosophers and the trickle-down free market and globalization philosophers and economists and politicians. And then I will deconstruct it, because it's all part of truth, not the full truth. So you see, we have a lot to share today. So let's get started. Chondroitin, and chondroitin is C-H-R-O-N-D-R-O-I-T-I-N, chondroitin. It's a nutrient, And in this study from the University of Montreal, it outperformed psilocybin in knee osteoarthritis study. That's important because for the first time, chondroitin sulfate, which I recommend be used at the same time with glucosamine sulfate and MSM. You can use 500 milligrams of MSM, 1,000 milligrams of chondroitin, 1,000 milligrams of glucosamine together. And this study showed that just chondroitin was more successful than this very important drug at reducing long-term progressive knee osteoarthritis. And this was presented to the American College of Rheumatology at its annual meeting. Now, we know that osteoarthritis is a slowly progressive disease in which joint cartilage breaks down. Normally, cartilage on the end of bones allows smooth, pain-free joint movement. But in osteoarthritis, cartilage becomes thin and irregular and resulting in symptoms of joint pain and stiffness. That grinding or cracking sensation can occur. And joints that are under high stress due to repeated activity or weight bearing, if you're overweight, it's going to happen. And it also can happen in your hips, your knees, your hands, and your spine. And so chondroitin sulfate, commonly called chondroitin, has long been used in the health community to help this, but now mainstream medicine has caught up and has now shown that it works. From Tufts University School of Medicine, if you want something to help knee osteoarthritis, Tai Chi does it. Quote from Tufts University School of Medicine, both Tai Chi and physical therapy positively impact pain, function, and other symptoms of knee osteoarthritis, making Tai Chi, that's T-A-I-C-H-I, a viable treatment alternative for people suffering with the degenerative diseases. And that was presented also at the same American College of Rheumatology at its annual meeting. So, Tai Chi. It's also meditation. Now, when I was growing up, we got two things each morning. And my mom would blend the two together with some orange juice and tell us to drink it down. So we drank it down. Didn't like it, but I drank it down. Because I figure mom knows best. And when you're a kid, your mom's everything. Because you don't have any knowledge of anything. And you know that she wouldn't do anything that give you anything that wasn't good for you. That's when I was growing up. Not so today. Well, we got a combination of cod liver oil and black elderberry extract. I never knew a home that didn't have black elderberry. In fact, my great aunt, who was the most unliked of all my relatives, which was surprising because she was the best. She was a vegan. She ran an 168-acre farm alone. Uncle Johnny helped her, but all of my in-laws, aunts and uncles, grew up on her farm during the Great Depression. They had nowhere else to go. They were all poor, and she took them all in, and she was my Uncle George's sister, and he was a strict disciplinarian, and no one liked him either because he was a strict disciplinarian. I mean, he really, let you know, morals, manners, etiquette, thoughtfulness, empathy. If you see that you got a neighbor that's in trouble, you go and help him. He once told me, he said, Gary Michael, if anyone ever has to come to you that you know to tell you they got a problem, it's too late. You should know enough about your friends and family and people in your life that if you see that they're suffering, you go to their aid. Now, they may say no, and they may say thanks, but I can do it on my own, which that's all right. That's the kind of man he was. Now, he was an exception, but so was my aunt and great aunt. And she was wiry, strong as can be. And she had a dry sense of humor, but nobody wanted to be around because they remember from the Great Depression, up every morning, that she'd clang this bell and everybody had to get up, my mom included, and then go to work on the farm. And they gave half of everything they made each day to poor people during the Great Depression. And we have to remember the kind of character. So when they're called the greatest generation, there's a reason for it. You do not have that at all in the United States today as a whole, but you do have it with individuals. but only a small percentage. Anyhow, she always had a ton of herbs. She had like her own apothecary. I didn't know what any of it was. I remember how it tasted, and because I would taste some of this stuff. And she said, "You feeling good?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, you want to feel better?" I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Take it," and she'd give me this black elderberry. So it's just to let you know that black elderberry fell out of favor for about 50 years. But if you look at the scientific literature on black elderberry, it's a phenomena. It should be in everyone's home. You should be taking it every day. This is from the University of Connecticut. Quote, "Studies from the University of Connecticut add new findings in the area of obesity. Black elderberry extract attenuates inflammation and metabolic dysfunction in diet-induced in this lab. According to the news reporting originating at the Institute, dietary anthocyanins, now those are your healing elements within the fruit or, in this case, the elderberry, is shown to reduce inflammation in these models and ameliorate obesity-related complications. Black elderberry is one of the richest sources of anthocyanins. Antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S. Now, what that means in lay language is grapes are rich in anthocyanins. Blueberries, pomegranate, dark cherries. So there's a whole lot of fruit that contain that. So the more combinations of fruit that you eat with the juices you drink, or if you make your own smoothie, that's all good for you. Not just in helping your brain, which blueberries do, and helping your arteries, which pomegranate does, but also helping your heart and helping your tissues, like tart cherries help pain in your muscles and in your joints. But the elderberry is like the top one. It helps everything. It helps your immune system. It helps your heart. It helps kill viruses. It kills bacteria. It's phenomenal for you. And so this way, it turns off inflammation. Now, turning off inflammation means it turns off all inflammation in the body, turns off inflammation in your brain. And that means that it helps prevent brain aging, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, memory loss, ALS, all the inflammatory conditions that lead to those stages. So make sure you're getting that in your diet. And finally, from the University of Alabama, published in OncoTarget, the journal, magnolia, by the way, I love magnolia trees. I grow magnolia trees. I think they're one of the most beautiful and aromatic plants, and just exquisite. And everywhere you go in the South, especially down around Savannah, you see a lot of magnolia trees down there. But then again, Savannah is one of the most beautiful cities in America. Very laid back and just lush in beauty because it's got a good growing season. It's close to the water. Here's what it says, quote, "The magnolia is an extremely beautiful flower. It may also serve as medicine. Why? Because an extract it contains may serve as a cancer treatment." And goes on to talk about an extract from magnolia bark. I'll spell it for you. This way you have it and you can do your own research. Hono, that's H-O-N-O, Kio, K-I-O-L, Honokiol. It's an extract from the magnolia bark, and it can help combat cancers of the head and neck. And they published it in the peer-reviewed journals. And let's face it, the head and neck cancers, you can get lip, nose, sinus, mouth, salivary gland, and throat cancers. And cell phone use, one of the big contributing factors. And also, if you have arthritis, a new study shows that turmeric and mulberry together make a big difference. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment, we have a lot to talk about vaccines and then the environment, including Fukushima. Please stay with us.
Got home about a half past 10. There was the woman I thought I knew in the arms of another man. I kept my cool, I ain't no fool. Let me tell you what happened then. Some clothes and I walked out in
and I ain't going back again. So take a letter, Maria.
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. A lot of times people miss a program. They're working, traveling, don't have time at that moment. Not a problem. Go to the archives, and I'll give you a phone number from anywhere in the United States or Canada. You call this number, and you can listen to five different programs. That archive phone number is 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. I want to talk for about 10 minutes about vaccines because there's been an ongoing controversy with one side of the issue being extremely antagonistic, filled with hubris and animosity towards any parent or physician, including pediatricians or scientists, or journalist that challenges the safety and efficacy of vaccines. It's a $60 billion a year industry, and it's all profit. In fact, you cannot sue a vaccine maker, even if it knowingly creates a vaccine that is dangerous, toxic, ineffective, or kills you. Knowing that they could produce anything they want under any conditions they want, and there is no liability. The only thing that could happen to them is the FDA would come in and say, "We'll clean up this and fix that." But it doesn't. It's all one giant fraud. Now, I don't say that haphazardly. I don't say it casually. I have more than 15,000 hours of scholarly research on the subject. I've produced 3 award-winning documentaries. My 4th is going to be done within about 4 weeks. Which is the latest information. I've written over 41 articles on vaccines, all fully cited. I'm just going to give you the latest because right now, anyone suggesting that vaccines have a link with autism spectrum disorder are immediately attacked. Hence, this is our latest contribution to this field, and this is posted on my site. Please share it with as many people as you can today. Today in the United States, a growing number of other countries, the official policy is that any scientific study, regardless of its methodology, quality, and author credentials, and peer review process, is summarily dismissed as incomplete, irrelevant, or unsupported if it finds a connection between any vaccine or combination of vaccines and autism spectrum disorder. Even when the CDC's own immunologist, Dr. William Thompson, whistleblows and provides tens of thousands of pages of scientific data and research proving a vaccine-autism connection, the matter is rapidly shoved under the table. In the case of Dr. Thompson's release of confidential documents to a congressional subcommittee, the CDC intentionally concealed their evidence that African-American boys under 36 months of age had a higher, over 324% risk of autism after receiving the MMR vaccine. The documents also prove the CDC has known for a long time that neurological tics indicating brain disturbances were associated with thimerosal-containing vaccines such as the influenza vaccine. We've also known for over 15 years, thanks to the Freedom of Information Act filing, that CDC officials, FDA officials, every one of the manufacturers of vaccines, the pharmaceutical company, the CDC's vaccine advisory panel, and the World Health Organization, and they all met secretly for 2 days at the Simpson Wood Retreat Center near Atlanta to deliberate on the Verostratin research findings proving thimerosal's role in the rise of autism. The meeting was held for the specific purpose to find ways to prevent, to obfuscate, to hide, or otherwise downplay the findings before they reach the public, create a spin, and manipulate the data, disprove a vaccine-autism connection. Why? Because the study of Verostratin proved there was a connection. So just put this in proper perspective. Here's all the leading vaccine people in the United States and the World Health Organizations all policymakers, and they came there because the evidence of a good study of over 100,000 children showed, yes, there is a vaccine-autism connection. So the question was, how can we distort it, destroy it, alter it, so the public never finds out about this? Now, you would think, that being the case, that there would have been a special prosecutor brought in to have brought every one of the people there and under oath to have questioned them. They have never been questioned by the media or any governmental agency. That's how powerful these people in the vaccine industry, the pharmaceutical industry, are. That's how much control they have over the judicial process. This was surely this would have been under the inspector general, his office, but no such investigation occurred. More recently, a private medical doctor, Dr. Barry Rumack, was hired by the FDA to review the status of mercury levels in children with an emphasis on childhood vaccines. Here's what his report says that you have not seen, the media has not printed. I'm sharing this with you today for the first time. Quote, this is the FDA's own hired medical director on this issue. At no point from birth to 16 to 18 months of age that infants were mercury levels below the EPA guidelines for an allowable mercury exposure. In fact, according to the models, blood and body burden levels of mercury peaked at 6 months of age at a shockingly high level of 120 ng/mL/g. To put this in perspective, the CDC classifies mercury poisoning as blood levels of mercury greater than 10 ng, and all the children he saw 120 ng, end quote. Dr. Rumack notes that the FDA chose to hide this finding from the public. So you and the public and the media are just today on this program being told the FDA engaged in a conspiracy. All the people involved should be brought in. There should be investigations and, where appropriate, indictments, because they are not protected with indemnity when they have chosen with malice aforethought to commit a felony. And this is also a crime against humanity. Every person, but in particular, every black person should be outraged, because once again, just like the Tuskegee experiment, you have been dealt a very critical card. You have been relegated to increasing autism spectrum disorder rates with knowledge in advance the MMR vaccine was a culprit. And they have hidden that information. But now it's on the record because the whistleblower gave it, spoke about it. It's public. But no one has been prosecuted. There's been no major demonstration. There was a tiny little demonstration down in Atlanta. But this should have been that every church in America should have its pastors, and the Nation of Islam and Dr. Farrakhan should all, and he's aware of this, by the way, should all protest and have one giant worldwide or American-wide demonstration against vaccines, and then hold these people accountable for nothing else because they used children as human guinea pigs. They knew for them to make their profits that kids were going to get autism, 324% increase in young African-American boys. And another investigative trial, an Italian court ruled that the MMR vaccine caused brain injury leading to autism. And I'll give you the case. The case was Valentino Bocca, B-O-C-C-A. Now, this ruling was intentionally blocked from the American media. It was scrubbed. You didn't see a thing about it. The Japanese government halted the MMR vaccine in 1993 due to the rising autism rates. And to date, the U.S. Vaccine Injury Compensation Court has paid out approximately $3.1 billion to families of vaccine-victimized children. The actual number of awarded cases, nevertheless, are small compared to the large number of claims filed and subsequently denied. And among these are cases related specifically to autism, such as Hannah Poling, Bailey Banks, Ryan Mojabi, Emily Moeller, and many others. Many more compensations have been awaited the vaccine injury compensation final review, but they're showing in time after time that the vaccines induce encephalitis and brain inflammation, and these are common events associated with regressive autism. Therefore, with the legal record intact and accessible by anyone, it stands in stark contrast to the adamant denials of the CDC, the pro-vaccine people, as a cause between vaccine, cause and effect between vaccine and autism. The evidence is overwhelming. Vaccines can and do cause autism. I'll be more specific. Thimerosal, the ethylmercury preservative commonly found in vaccines, is perhaps the ingredient with the longest history of controversy. The pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly tested thimerosal back in the 1930s. In fact, back at 1930, giving it a clean record of safety, even though its own trials had shown it caused serious neurological damage and even death in both animals and humans. And during that decade, a competitor vaccine maker, Pittman Moore, had also conducted toxicological studies with dogs and concluded the preservative was, quote, unsatisfactory as a serum intended for use on dogs, end quote. Now, during the Second World War, vaccines with thimerosal were required to be labeled, quote, poison. And later in 1972, Eli Lilly itself discovered that thimerosal in doses 100 times weaker than in a typical vaccine at that time were, quote, toxic to tissue cells. Nevertheless, the drug maker continued to promote the illusion and the lie that vaccines containing thimerosal were safe and highly suitable as a vaccine preservative. And government health officials and vaccine manufacturers to this day have known of the long history of research confirming thimerosal as a toxic poison unsuitable for human delivery. And a former leading vaccine developer for Merck had once warned his firm of the dangers of administering vaccine-laced vaccines to newborns and infants and declared that the industry knows very well, quote, there are non-toxic alternatives that were equally effective and could be used to replace thimerosal as a preservative. The scientific literature relied upon to discredit thimerosal risks contained serious flaws in trial design and the quality of science. When the father of the modern pro-vaccine ideology, Dr. Paul Offit, goes on the attack to condemn anyone who would suggest a thimerosal autism association, it's difficult for a rational, objective person to take him seriously. None of the most commonly cited 20-plus primary flagship studies referenced to discredit thimerosal risks is a biological study. Instead, each is either an ecologic or cohort report. Most of these studies have been independently reviewed and trashed for gross bias, serious design flaws, and serious scientific negligence. The chief author of the ever-popular Danish thimerosal autism survey has been used before the U.S. Congress to justify there's no harm, there's no autism connection. In point of fact, is under criminal investigation for embezzling vast sums from the CDC to finance the study. A review of the Danish study's collection methods reveals immediately it was a complete sham, a fraud. And since these studies are only statistical analysis using a variety of massage perimeters to compare select populations or subgroups within a population, they are highly predisposed to intentional design defects and data manipulation in order to reach a desired result. And for this reason, ecologic and cohort studies are politically desirable within the vaccine industry and the CDC. Data can be changed. It can be massaged in numerous ways to reach a chosen conclusion. However, in the real world of real independent hard science, such as observational and non-biological studies, lack the methodological rigor to establish trustworthy scientific assumptions. In fact, the only conclusion we can draw from the arsenal of studies cited insistently by the deniers of thimerosal's neurotoxicity is that more comprehensive and rigorous research is demanded. This is not to say that all ecological cohort studies are worthless. There are also many important cohort studies showing a vaccine-autism relationship, and some of these also suffer from poor design. Nevertheless, population studies are inconclusive and should never be used as a substantial proof nor the final word to posit nor negate biomolecular activity and adverse effects of any toxic chemical or substance. Only double-blind, placebo-controlled biological research can determine a probable medical certainty. In the case of thimerosal and other vaccine ingredients, this requires accurate detection and measurement of toxic activity and its consequences at the cellular level. And this is accomplished by observing neurotoxic effects in either two methods. One is by in vivo studies, which observe the entire living organism. For example, in vivo studies conducted at the University of Pittsburgh report that when macaque monkey infants were injected with thimerosal-containing vaccines equivalent to a human infant's vaccine schedule, they exhibited neurotoxic disorders characteristic of autism. And for the first time, an animal model examined behavioral neuromorphometric consequences of the CDC's childhood vaccination schedule in primates mimicking autism abnormalities. A Pittsburgh study was attacked viciously by the vaccine community. Consequently, it never got past peer review for publication in a leading medical journal. It had good results. It showed, when you give the same vaccine you would give to a baby and you give that to a monkey, the monkey exhibits autism. So they kept it from being published. Every manner of attempt was made to discredit the findings by alleging flaws in the research. Yet, even if there are flaws in the study's design or execution, a biologic trial should have alerted federal health authorities that further investigation funding is essential to convincingly duplicate Pittsburgh's results or negate them. Instead, the study has been denied outright, and no efforts have been by the CDC or through the National Institutes of Health grants to launch a more thorough biologic primate study to bring greater clarity to the vaccine autism debate. Now, the second method is in vitro studies that investigate a substance toxicity to cells or tissues in an artificial environment, like a cultural medium, a petri dish, which are factually known to be related to a serious health or to neurological issues. Now, one critical important part of the in vitro study observed thimerosal or mercury's direct association with the deterioration of mitochondria in human brain cells. This was published in the Journal of Toxicology. The neuroscientists at the prestigious Methodist Hospital Medical Center in Houston published their investigation into thimerosal's toxicological effects upon the mitochondria in human astrocyte cells. And by the way, astrocytes are the most abundant cells found in the human brain and are critical for maintaining normal, healthy blood-brain barrier function. And the researchers observed that vaccine, the ethyl mercury, which is more lipophilic, meaning the ability to cross the blood-brain barrier, then methylmercury, and is readily taken up by the astrocyte's mitochondria and thereby disrupting the cell's respiratory functions and eventually leading to the cell to die. The research observed that astrocytes, when exposed to the mercury thimerosal, exhibited extreme signs of oxidation and, quote, highly damaging mitochondrial DNA. Now, this study seemed to provide biological evidence to support the claims that thimerosal is very likely associated with some incidences of autism. And the influenza vaccine, which contains high levels of mercury, and the MMR vaccine are the two most cited vaccines associated with autism, yet studies point to other vaccines as well. Doctors at Stony Brook University Medical Center determined that male infants vaccinated with the hepatitis B vaccine prior to 1999 had a 300% higher autism rate. The risk was greater among non-white boys, and during the first four-year period of the study between 1997 and 2000, thimerosal was still used as a preservative in the hepatitis B vaccine. I have a lot more on this, including the studies on aluminum and the aluminum-laced vaccines, increasing the aluminum levels in the murine brain tissue, leading to neurotoxicity. Also, aluminum hydroxide, the most commonly common form of adjuvant used in vaccine deposits, mostly in the kidneys, liver, and the brain. And long-term exposure to vaccine-derived aluminum hydroxide, which is today an ingredient in almost all vaccines, results in the macrophage lesions. And I have all the rest of this in our study. I've given you only part of the study today for time reasons. I want to get to my guests and other issues. But you can read the entire original investigative report on the archive page. Separately, on the same issue, this is from Yale University and from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. from EchoWatch. Yale University study shows an association between vaccines and brain disorders. A team of researchers from Yale, quote, School of Medicine and Penn State College of Medicine have found a disturbing association between the timing of vaccines and the onset of certain brain disorders in a subset of children. And that's one, and this was published in Frontiers of Psychiatry. And then another study, all of which we've posted, this is from Celeste McGovern of GreenMed Info. Dirty vaccines. Every human vaccine tested was contaminated with heavy metals and debris in new study. Quote, researchers examined 44 samples of 30 different vaccines and found dangerous contaminants, including red blood cells in one vaccine and metal toxicants in every single sample tested, except one animal vaccine. Using extremely sensitive new technologies not used in vaccine manufacture, Italian scientists reported they were, quote, baffled by their discoveries, which included single particles and aggregates of organic debris, including red cells of humans or possible animal origin, and metals including lead, tungsten, gold, and chromium that had been linked to autoimmune diseases and leukemia. The studies published in this week's International Journal of Vaccine and Vaccination. The researchers were a part of the National Council of Research of Italy. That's equivalent to our National Academy of Sciences. And there's a whole article explaining why this is all bad and why there is no such thing as a sterile vaccine. They were all contaminated. But read the entire studies for yourself. Now we're going to take a break, come back, and go to my guest to talk about Fukushima. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. There's a lot occurring today on the internet, some accurate, much of it inaccurate, that deals with Fukushima. And I want to bring you the latest information, and we're going to go to Tacoma Park, Maryland, where standing by is Kevin Camps, K-A-M-P-S. He's a specialist in radioactive waste storage and nuclear facility operations for Beyond Nuclear, a nonprofit organization opposing nuclear power and weapons and advocating for safeguarding our future. And for years, he was a leader opposing the nuclear industry's efforts to dump radioactive waste at Yucca Mountain, Nevada, and he challenged the federal subsidies for the new reactors and nuclear waste projects. And he's been to Chernobyl and in fact, he was part of the International Chernobyl Children's Project, and he continues to work on that. And his website is beyondnuclear.com. Nice to have you with us today, Kevin.
Thanks, Gary. That's beyondnuclear.org, by the way, O-R-G.
Okay. This is right out just a few minutes ago from Japan Times, from Kyoto. Highest radiation readings since 3 of 11 detected at Fukushima number one reactor. The radiation levels in the contaminant vessel of reactor 2 at the crippled Fukushima number one power plant has reached a maximum of 530 sieverts per hour, the highest since the triple core meltdown in March 2011, Tokyo Electric Power Holdings said. TEPCO said on Thursday that the blazing radiation reading was taken near the entrance to the space just below the pressure vessel, which contains the reactor core. The high figure indicates that some of the melted fuel that escaped the pressure vessel is nearby. At that level, a person could die from even a very brief exposure, highlighting the difficulties ahead as the government and TEPCO grope their way towards dismantling all three reactors crippled by the march. So that's where we begin. Now tell us what you know and why this is so alarming, and what we're not being told that we should about radiation getting into the water, into the aquifers, into the air. And unless you know of some law of physics I don't, when radiation is in the air and the air moves, which it does, and wind currents pick up that radiation, it's going to go in every direction the wind takes it, including Tokyo, the largest populated city in the world with 39 to 40 million people, not far away from that location. The forum is yours.
Right. Very good questions. Well, this, you know, news that's kind of creating a buzz around the world, you know, there's different ways to look at it. I mean, these meltdowns of the three reactors at Fukushima Daiichi, Daiichi just means number one, so it's the Fukushima number one nuclear power plant, and it's just 7.5 miles north of the Fukushima Daini nuclear power plant, which is number two. So you got, like you said, you've got six reactors at Fukushima Daiichi, you've got another four at Fukushima Daini. They were all thrown into crisis by the March 11th, 2011, 9.0 magnitude earthquake, and then followed about an hour later by a massive tsunami. And that's what caused the three reactors at Fukushima Daiichi to melt down. And it was a very fortunate thing that the four operating reactors at Fukushima Daini did not melt down. They were saved by a single off-site power line that thankfully survived the earthquake and tsunami. So it could have been a whole lot worse than it is, but it's pretty darn bad as it is. And what this latest news is of these pretty incredible radioactivity rates that were measured by Fukushima owner Tokyo Electric Power Company, and I like to convert the sieverts to rems because I'm old school, so 530 sieverts is 53,000 rem, and yes, indeed, if a human being at a close enough distance without radiation shielding were to be exposed to that kind of dose rate, you would receive a fatal dose of radioactivity, mostly gamma radiation, in the space of a minute or less. And you might take some time to die. Maybe it'd take you some days or weeks to die, but you would die. That's why people can't go in there. So incredibly, they really didn't measure the radiation. What they did is they sent a camera in through a pipe and took video imagery. And what they did is they measured the disruption of the video imagery to get that estimated dose rate. And actually, it could be, there's huge uncertainty, it could be a third lower than 53,000 rems per hour, or it could be a third higher. So they've yet to send a radiation monitor in, because the thing is, with the cameras, with the radiation monitors, with the robots, the dose rate is so high that it quickly fries electronics. So one way to look at this is, you know, this could have been the case this whole time. Since the meltdown occurred way back in March of 2011, these dose rates could have been occurring in there. This is the closest they've come to that melted core. And so this could have been going on now for nearly 6 years, and this is just the closest that they've come to even attempting to measure what's going on in there.
What does it mean for the people in Japan first? And also, I saw how close they've allowed people to live to Fukushima, and I think this is a crime against humanity.
Yes. Well, you mentioned previously in your question, too, what kind of releases are happening, and yes, it's a scandal what the Abe government has done. What they've done is they've created this imaginary line that is 12.4 miles or 20 kilometers in radius inland, because this is right on the ocean side, so it also extends out in the ocean. They've drawn this circle, and they've said you can move right up to that line and be safe, and it's just not the case. And there's actually exceptions to that, because to the northwest direction, the fallout in the first days and weeks of this catastrophe was so bad on land that they don't even dare move people in there, because there'd probably be clinical symptoms showing up in people living in those places. So they don't even dare, in a short period of time, they don't dare move people in that northwest direction. But in the rest of the compass, they are moving people right up to that arbitrary line, and it's just not right. what they've done for the past 6 years now is they've tried to clean up very narrow passageways in the landscape, you know, just a short distance on either side of the road, just a short distance in from people's homes. And people are, in that sense, I guess you could say, living in an open-air radioactive prison. Don't you dare set foot a certain distance off of that roadside, because you're going to be into an area that's not even been touched by cleanup crews. And what's really absurd about all that is, you know, sometimes it rains, sometimes it snows, sometimes the wind blows. The contamination in those areas that haven't been touched yet will simply flow back down into the areas that supposedly have been cleaned up and recontaminate. And so it's just absurdity. It's being done to create the appearance or the illusion of normalcy. Why would they do such a thing? Because they don't want to declare huge regions of Japan, already a very densely populated island, uninhabitable. And so there's a lot of magic tricks and illusions going on. And a part of that dynamic, scandalously, is that the Olympics of 2020 are coming to the Tokyo area. And they want to host the Olympics not only in Metro Tokyo, but even in Fukushima Prefecture, there are sites they want to host the Olympics at. So that's the big sales pitch. You know, everything's under control, Abe told the Olympic Committee several years ago, won the bid, and now they've got to try to keep this illusion going. But there are flows of radioactivity into the environment still. One of them is remarkably a chronic flow of radioactive groundwater at relatively low levels of radioactivity into the ocean every single day for the past 6 years. The figure is about 80,000 gallons per day of radioactive groundwater. But the levels in that groundwater are nothing compared to the levels in the high-level radioactive wastewater storage tanks. This is the water used every day to cool those melted cores so that they don't reignite and melt further down into the containment structure or into the environment below.
Kevin, we're just out of time. Let me ask you one last quick question. Give me a quick answer. How serious is the threat of that radiation reaching the United States? How much is already here? And can we show, by any objective measure, its impact upon aquatic life or human life on the West Coast?
In the first days of Fukushima, atmospheric fallout reached the United States at relatively high levels that went on for as long as the atmospheric releases. The ocean plume reached North America in April of 2014 and continues, because there's continuous flow into the ocean. It's an unprecedented global catastrophe for the Pacific Ocean, is one way.
Isn't it amazing how people in California are living in such denial of this, eating the seaweed, eating the fish, the tuna, and everything else that floats, swims out there? It's just amazing to me that people are wishing something would change but not willing to acknowledge how serious it is. This should be a worldwide effort, and you have enough smart people in this world, enough technology in this world, that they could be all brought to bear like a Marshall Plan to fix this, and it would get fixed. But it's not being done.
Right. It's a cover-up, what's going on and what's not going on.
Kevin, I want to thank you for the good work you're doing, and please give us your website again.
Yeah, it's beyondnuclear.org.
And all the latest information is up there. Kevin Camps, thank you for being with us today. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank all of you for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.